The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. This is Mike Consul, your host. Our topic is housing. What is more critical than one's abode? What is more intractable a problem in the United States than homelessness, or the world for that matter? And what is more inviting than a beautifully designed and immaculately maintained housing community? And what do homeowners and real estate investors worry about more than their property values and the forces at play there? My guest is a person who's completely immersed in the subject. In fact, she operates from the Phoenix metropolitan area, one of the nation's hottest housing markets. Her name is Kate Kaminsky, and she is Chief Operating Officer at Walton Global, and as such, is responsible for the day-to-day operations of the company and all the systems, resources, and people in place to achieve the organization's targets. Walton Global is a land, asset management, and real estate investment company with more than 93,000 acres under ownership, management, and administration in the United States and Canada. Those acres are valued at billions of dollars. And the company has a big footprint with offices in places such as Singapore, Dubai, Beijing, Shanghai, Hong Kong, Taipei, and other global cities. Kate Kaminsky, fellow Sun Devil, thank you for joining us.
Oh, I didn't realize you were a Sun Devil as well, Mike. We're in good company. Thanks for having me today. Excited to talk all things housing.
You bet. And I know a Sun Devil when I meet one. what did you study at ASU?
Business management marketing with a specialization in international business.
And for our listeners, if you're not quite familiar, ASU is not Appalachian State University. Back when I was in West Virginia, I used to see ASU t-shirts. And I said, well, I went to Arizona State too. No, this is Appalachian State University. What are you talking about, white man? Arizona State. So did you study those subjects knowing that you wanted to be doing something approximating what you're doing now? Or was real estate, this whole real estate business that you're in, and have been in prior to Walton Global, something that you kind of fell into or discovered?
So I would say I fell into it, come from a long line of family-owned businesses, but actually in the food business. My father's side of the family is in the meatpacking business, and my mother's is in the produce business. And they both own their own companies. With that, when I went to school and finished early out here, the home builders in Phoenix were some of the companies that were recruiting the most aggressively at ASU, because that is such a significant part of the job makeup of Phoenix. And so I ended up working in new home building, and from there was introduced to Walton, and I've been here since 2007.
Very good. So you're, again, as I said at the top, you're steeped in this particular, in the real estate sector. So let me start by asking you what you see as the most powerful housing property type in the United States or North America, maybe I should say, since you operate in Canada as well and own property there. Is there a particular property type? There's an awful lot of conversation about build to rent communities. Obviously, apartments have done well for years. Single family housing is, I shouldn't say moving because it's kind of frozen because of interest rates and such. What do you see as the most powerful property type within the housing property type, the sub property type?
So I definitely would say it's single family residential. That just really, in my opinion, is the foundation of our housing industry in the US. Of course, the American dream, everyone wants to own a home. But more significantly than that, The other sectors seem to be a little bit more sensitive to market fluctuations. Of course, lending rates, to get a number of these projects off the ground, whether it be a multifamily project, build to rent, certainly all sectors that are still performing strong as the market is as a whole. But really, if you hone in on single family homes specifically, permits last month alone were at an annualized pace of over 1 million units. And that's a 35% increase year over year. So we're seeing that strong outlook or forecast because permits are they're the not the prediction, they are what's coming down the pipe as it pertains to new homes that are going to be built. The timeline is to be determined, but with those kind of strong numbers and what we're continuing to see in the industry with new homes, just really taking over resale inventory because of mortgage rates and that really creating a bit of a standstill amongst the resale market. I think 2024 is going to be a banner year for single family residential new home building.
The year of the house, the year of the house. Let's hope so. Now, let me ask you about just how much the property market, the residential market, is being reshaped. When COVID came along, there was a lot of movement. A lot of companies said, live where you want to live. And Phoenix, in my understanding, was a major recipient of people moving to the state. There are a lot of people who are, hey, I can take my Google salary, leave Silicon Valley, move to Idaho or wherever, a much cheaper market. How big a factor has that been in the housing market? I mean, is it overstated? It does seem that it's very fluid, not in terms of necessarily properties changing hands, at least not right now, but it seems that people are very fluid in terms of deciding, I'm going to live in a different state right now. And I'm not sure if that's because people are getting older and they're deciding, I want to finish my life in this other state. I want to retire there, and they're getting a jump on it, or whether it really is about the freedom of work, the freedom to work remotely. Sorry for the long-winded question.
No, it's a great question. And I think that's really one that you can look at it from different lenses. Ultimately, we've landed in a place where there's a lot more flexibility in people's lives and in terms of where they can live, work, and play. Because most people used to be tied down to where my job is located is where I have to live. And with this, whether it's a hybrid environment or complete remote flexibility, that is allowing people to make decisions not solely based on where their job is headquartered, but on what is, the best choice for them and perhaps their family if they have one, but from an affordability perspective, maybe from the weather, location, lots of factors. And we are definitely continuing to see positive trends in especially the Sun Belt market, which is where, I think that everyone would expect that you're going to see that strong performance. However, we've also been seeing, astounding numbers in the Northeast, the Midwest, in Q4, not as much in the month of January, but the Northeast, they were looking at a really strong construction season in January, which I think was a result of some good weather that they ran into. Their year over year up considerably, and so I think right now everybody is still looking to really, settle into exactly what the new norm is going to look like. Companies are still, grappling with, do we require people to come back to work or continue to offer flexibility, which also gives us the ability to perhaps reduce some of our rent or lease costs, because we don't need as big of a footprint. And that is definitely affecting things on the retail commercial side of things. And so I would say that we haven't necessarily landed in exactly what the future is going to look like. But those markets that are really looking to, capitalize on affordability, capitalize on bringing, new jobs to the area, are those states where we're going to continue to see the most growth. And I mean, those are the usual suspects: Texas, Florida, Georgia,
Tennessee,
Tennessee, exactly.
Arizona, and so on. It's, there's certain states out there that are just much more economical for retiree than others. And as we age, we certainly see people gravitating in those directions. Let me ask you what you see when you look overseas, particularly in Asia, where your organization's very present there. I suspect it isn't single family homes in Asia that's really it's not going to be the year of the house and China and Malaysia and Singapore and Vietnam necessarily. Aren't those cultures much more multifamily oriented? Or am I
Certainly.
wrong? Have things
No,
changed?
you are 100% correct. They tend to go more vertical, as compared to, we focus on suburbs in so many cities here in the US. Now they have a better handle on infrastructure, if you will, to support movement of people. That continues to be interesting here in the United States, how we keep building out and we don't have that public transportation or transit system that you do see in so many other parts of the world that really help move people efficiently around. But with that, we're focused on raising capital around the globe, but particularly we have been in Asia since the 1990s, and that continues to be a strong market for us as a result of many of their desire to invest in the United States real estate market, invest into secure hard assets that are located in, predictable or stable economic and political environments. And so we, from an investment standpoint, continue to focus on raising capital there. But we don't do much there or have any assets actually, because this is our backyard. This is where Walton has built, decades-long relationships with not only people on the capital raising side, but with are the ultimate buyers of our land. So whether it be home builders or commercial industrial end users. And so really we're focused on expanding our asset base, managing assets here in North America, and just raising capital overseas.
Talk about that model, the Walton Global model. You're buying property, you're banking property, maybe you're making, you're putting, you're extending infrastructure to it, you're getting it permit ready, maybe, and then going to Mr. and Ms. Developer and investor and saying, this puppy's all ready to go. What do you say? And this is what we're asking for the land. Is it permit ready or just infrastructure ready?
So there's a bit of a mix, and a lot of that just comes with the amount of time we've been doing this business. And what I mean by that is we started out just doing pre-development land investments, so buying land in the path of growth, taking it through the zoning and entitlement process, and then finding, a buyer on the other end that was well suited for that property and development at that time. Over time, what we've found, and especially as a result of the changes, with the Great Recession and the way groups are out there buying land today, we've changed our model a bit such that we really focus on finding a buyer on the front end. We're looking to locate assets, identify them, diligence them, put them under contract, and look for the end users to not only assist in making those acquisition decisions, because what better than a gut check from the eventual buyers of the property as to whether or not they have some initial interest. But really, instead of Walton doing the rezoning and entitlement efforts to our desire or specifications, we now like to have the buyer alongside us, making those decisions, doing much of that work so that it's exactly the way they want it, when they're ready to close. And that model we really substantially launched in, call it 2019, version 2.0, if you will, of our pre-development land model. And it's worked out extremely well for us, but even more so for our buyers. And that has
Why wouldn't the
really
buyers just go straight there? Why would the buyers, what, how do you serve them as an intermediary versus them saying, we've identified the land, we will buy it ourselves? So let's start with that.
That's a great question, and one that we do get asked all the time, but it's as simple as, since the Great Recession, your builders, developers, everyone is looking to be land light. And what I mean by that is they do not want to hold land on their balance sheet that isn't going to turn, isn't going to, be sold, generate revenue through home sales or lot sales within a
Oh,
24-month period of time.
just in
And
time delivery, huh?
just in time delivery.
Wow. So you bank it but you're banking it, and sitting on a piece of undeveloped land costs you money, correct?
It does.
So what about that? You have to make sure that that land that you've acquired, that you're not going to let it sit too long. You got to get it off your out of the warehouse, off your plate, so to speak, or out of the warehouse. What about that?
So one of the core principles of our investment strategy is we are buying our land for all equity because we don't want to be, constricted when interest rates are rising or if there is a dip in the market. We don't want to have to be forced to sell or have, these payment obligations.
But what
Um,
about
that,
taxes?
so we set aside reserves at the time that we raise capital and acquire the property that's going to fund those taxes and any other, ongoing management or operational costs. But so
What's the
it.
longest you're willing? I'm sorry to interrupt, Kate, but
No.
I'm trying to dig a
Sure.
little deeper here. What's the longest Walton Global is willing to hold a piece of property? Before it says this is just too long a timeline, we're paying too much in taxes to just be sitting on this.
So, I wish there was a uniform answer that I could give you that just was blanket that would answer it in one sentence, but there just really isn't because, it really depends on where the market is at when a buyer presents itself, and does that make sense? What does the return profile look like? We just closed on a property in Georgia that we were projecting to be a 3 to 4 year hold, and we're already negotiating terms just 6 months after acquisition, and we're likely to sell it in under a year. But it's hitting, strong return metrics, and we think it's the right time to exit as compared to holding it longer. But then we have other properties that are really, path of growth. And for those, we have some properties that could be held, for 10 to 15 years, but those were projected to be properties that could be held longer based on, their proximity to existing infrastructure. So if I were to give you that sweet spot, we're really looking for properties to exit within a 5-year period of time. Our biggest current growth product line is our builder land financing product line, which is where we actually have builders identify properties and they put them under contract and then they assign them to us and we land bank it back to them. So again, just feeding that just-in-time inventory demand. And with those, we've put outside dates in those programs of 5 years. So that's really what our target is, regardless of the product line, knowing that, things could go longer, but that is the beauty of owning things without any leverage on them, right?
What about leasing? Did you ever own land and say you build on it and you pay us lease fees? You can sign a 50-year lease, 100-year lease, 25-year lease, whatever, or lease to own, so that you have a cash flow. Because when you're banking the land and then you're selling it, you get a one-time payment, correct? Versus if you were to, and I'm not sure if this is re realistic for most builders, they might say, we really need to own the land. We don't want to lease it. Is there ever a leasing play there for Walton Global?
Yeah, we have leases on our properties while we hold them, typically agricultural leases, which, we're doing strategically to keep the property taxes low. But as it pertains to, entering into those long-term land leases, like you noted, such as we get solar companies coming all the time, different green energy, wind farms, whatever the opportunity may be. And that really is not part of our business model and something that is not what we're looking to engage in. And so I would say that's not a focus for Walton as much as really looking for land that is projected for future development. And when I say future, like I said, hopefully development ready within 24 to 36 months, and then will be sold to either public home builders or industrial commercial users. And I say public home builders because, one of our other restrictions with some of our programs is that we do want to ensure for our investors that they have some additional security. And so we're looking for builders that are going to develop off balance sheet so that, we can remain in first position. We don't want construction financing that's going to go ahead of us. And so our largest buyer audience, buyer group is definitely the publics.
Now, how many different property types does the properties that your organization deals with, how many different property types out there? Is it strictly housing, or are you also into mixed use, retail, office, and so on?
It's primarily housing. I'd say over 85% of our assets are for residential purposes, and primarily single family residential. We do have, components of every property that have maybe some multifamily, definitely neighborhood commercial, because we're typically looking at master planned communities. So, we're buying large tracts of land that are going to incorporate maybe schools in the design, neighborhood retail, commercial, potentially even additional commercial, depending on the site and whether it's located on major thoroughfares. And then you'll typically see, maybe some office or expanded commercial. Industrial plays are a smaller portion of our portfolio, probably 10% of our assets. And those are some exciting transactions that we've closed on and have upcoming, really seeing the most activity in data centers as well as, green energy campuses and technologies. So those have been focal areas for us in terms of buyers on the industrial side.
Let me get back to this whole, question about, you buy land, then you sell the land, you add some kind of markup, or some kind of fees associated with having to bank the land and prepped it. So, what about? I mean, are there not times when Walton Global looks at that land and thinks, it would be nice if it was more like an annuity and it was just spitting money out to us as we go? Is the buy and sell, buy bank and sell model, as profitable as it needs to be, and you're really not interested in getting involved in all the mess of the environmental impact report and the permitting and the protests from the local residents who don't want more housing built or what have you?
So we contemplate those sorts of things all the time, but we really look to remain diligent in our approach, because there's no question that there's a lot of value in that sector of the business. And we've done developments in our history. We've got a few active developments that we're still managing today, but they really take a lot of time and energy and focus, and you need entire teams around just that one development, where we have a private equity-like model where we're able to really have people that have a pretty strong bandwidth and are able to manage an entire region of assets, and then working with consultants and other professionals within a market to do a lot of the third-party work. But so I would say Walton is probably going to stick to our pre-development land model, and you could do our marketing for us, Mike. We really look at our builder land financing program like it's an annuity. The biggest risk that we believe exists within the structure is the option period before the buyer, exercises their option and buys the property back from us. But once they do buy the property, and they just have deferred payment obligations in the future, that's really an analogy that we use, is that it does perform much like an annuity, because every time a home sells, there's deferred payment revenue coming in and being distributed to our investors. So, that is in an area of the business that is consistent. And I think there's a huge place within the market for consistent, secure products. But we do have, on our pre-development land side of the business, we just last year launched our first 1031 exchange or DST, Delaware Statutory Trust offerings, whereby we're putting, I think we might be some of the first land-based DSTs, because you typically see people doing these types of structures or 1031s where you have income-generating
Yes.
properties that are, receiving rental income. And of course, with land, we are not, and it's something that we really have to control the acquisition, ensure that this is going to fit within it's ultimately the sale metrics that are very important with the DST 1031 structures, because when you sell a property, you need to roll over into a like-kind investment in order to obtain that tax deferral. And so
Right.
with a land asset, you need a bulk sale, and bulk sales are certainly not common, as we've been talking this whole time about, you know, just-in-time inventory demands, but when it's the right piece of property with the right, you know, level of entitlements and the right buyer, we're already seeing success with our first offering in this model. And so, you know, there continues to be creative ways to, you know, structure and look for upside, even with raw land. I know it's boring, but we certainly keep ourselves busy with it. You know,
boring but clean, right? I mean,
boring
it's
but clean.
I like, you know, it. You're not trying to collect rent from people. You're not worrying about, hey, we need to put a paint job on, we need to upgrade it. It's becoming outdated and so on. So there is a cleanliness to just having raw land, no question about that. A final question, Kate. We're not building enough homes in the United States, is my understanding. What's the biggest impediment that you see to more robust home building? You know, I look at where you live in the Valley of the Sun there. Scottsdale has a development that was going to go in place. They don't have enough water. So I'm thinking water shortages in some cases are staunching new development. What do you see as you look across North America? Let's just stick with the kind of the homeland, the United States and Canada. What's really holding back more robust construction of new homes?
It's a good thing you left this for the last question, because we could do 10 segments on this discussion and still be going. Really, I think it's the policy challenges that we have that are focused on ensuring that we're approving enough land that is intended for, you know, high density residential development that is going to lend to affordable housing. Policies, you know, restrictions on new development continue to get tighter and tighter. Taxes that are imposed on new developments continue, and impact fees continue to be more significant, you know, making the numbers not work in many instances. And then that doesn't even get into, as you noted, you know, other challenges that you might have with water or sewer infrastructure. But with that, if we don't have, you know, readily available development ready land, we're just going to continue driving the price of land up, and it's going to continue to compound this affordability crisis that we have. And really, I think there needs to be some stronger policy reform around ensuring that, you know, as a country, within each state, that there is effective and efficient approvals and mechanisms for developers and builders to take properties through the zoning and entitlement process. And I'm not saying it should be a free-for-all, but there needs to be, like I said, effective policies around, you know, abilities to get this done. And that's just something that all we hear about across the board is the increased challenges that everyone is facing trying to get any of these communities off the ground.
My guest has been Kate Kaminsky. Again, she is Chief Operating Officer at Walton Global. And Kate, you never broke stride a single time. You know your stuff. I really appreciate you taking time to come on the program and explain that business model at Walton Global, which is you know, a little different. There's not that many companies that I've run into that play in the same space. I know there's others out there, but yours is playing in that space and at quite a big level, just in terms of the global footprint. Appreciate your time.
I appreciate you having me.